morning.
Good morning.
Please the court, Patrick Truitt on behalf of Luis Montez, the defendant appellant in this case. The court knows that a 29-year-old man who was described by the trial judge as a glorified driver of a car and a person who was being used by another got a 10-year sentence and was denied safety valve relief. The safety valve law, which is found in 18 U.S.C. 3553F and in the guidelines of 5C1.2, allows a court, under certain circumstances, to depart from the mandatory minimum required by the law, in this case a 10-year mandatory minimum. The requirements, which the court found, there are five of them, the court found that four of them applied, and the fifth one did not, and that's the issue before this court. The fifth one is that he give complete and truthful information about the offense and offenses that are part of the same scheme or conduct, but that even if he gives information the government already has, or he can't help them in any way, he doesn't lose the guideline relief. What we have here is a receipt of a duffel bag of drugs in a garage in Cicero, Illinois. The evidence deduced at the motion to suppress was that the defendant received this bag from a man named Barrero, handed it to him in his garage, and the police found the bag in the garage. The interesting thing is there are two cars in this garage, and he has supposedly received the bag between the two cars, but when the other officers come on the scene, the bag is on the left side of the garage, on the other side of one of the cars, and he's on the east side of the garage just walking in with keys in his hand. He has always said, I know he was going to bring drugs. I knew this Barrero was bringing the drugs. I knew he was going to put it in one of my cars, but I never got to the bag. I didn't have the duffel bag in my possession. He pled guilty, and when he pled guilty, he said, the judge says, do you believe that the factual basis of the government related? And he said, no. I said, what's the difference? I didn't have the bag. But he pleaded, and the judge and the prosecutor said, but Judge, that's, the prosecutor said, and the judge agreed, he had constructive possession. And we agreed with that. And he was pleading guilty to constructive possession of those drugs. He then sought safety valve relief, and he sat down with the government, and he told them about a man named Madrigal Martinez, who was in an apartment above where they found more drugs than a gun. They found Martinez's prints on some of the drugs. They found a money counter and an electronic scale in Madrigal Martinez's room. And he told them, I was a runner for Madrigal Martinez. He told them all about it. He did, however, again say in his proffer, I didn't receive the duffel bag. It was over on the other wall. I never saw it. And it was important because the agent said, when we saw the duffel bag over on the side there, it now was open, and we could see from the alley that there were bags of cocaine inside the duffel bag. He couldn't refute it because he said, I never saw it. I can't say it was open or not. It would have been nice if he were to lie and get in and say, oh, I saw that bag, and it was tied up tight. Nobody could have seen it. He said, I never saw the bag. I got a call, and there's evidence that Barrero was on a cell phone. I came down to help him put the drugs in my car, which had secret compartments, and he was going to deliver it. He doesn't deny it. And I submit that the whole purpose of the safety valve, Seventh Circuit cases and a recent case, which I'll send by letter to the clerk, it just... This February, called Emezou, M-E-E-Z-O-U, said the purpose of the safety valve is to get somebody to cooperate. All the cases, Arrington in this circuit, cases I've cited, it's to cooperate. Not tell us how the police arrested you. That's not the point. In fact, that second sentence would make no sense of saying that if you give information the police already know, it doesn't matter, you still will get the safety valve. Well, they're not asking, tell us how the police got to you. They're not asking, tell us about the arrest. They want to know, who are you dealing drugs with? Who did you get it from? Who are you going to give it to? How did you make your money? All of these things he told them in his proffer. The one thing the judge said is, I don't believe you as to that you didn't have the bag, and therefore I'm denying you safety valve. I don't think that I submit that none of the cases talk about asking the defendant to agree with how the police arrested him. As I pointed out, if the police said we came to his house and he consented to the search, and he says, I didn't consent, but yes, I did have the drugs and I'm pleading guilty and I'll tell you where I got the drugs and who was it I was going to sell them to and how much money I made, it would seem that under this rationale, you can't get safety valve because you deny you consented.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Tewitt, because there's a provision 5, as you cited in 5C1.2, talks about the defendant must truthfully provide the government with all information and evidence he had concerning the offense or offenses that were part of the same course of conduct or of a common scheme or plan. So are you asking us to interpret that to say that it only applies to not what happens in the course of the arrest or the statements that he might make or the circumstances surrounding the arrest, and we should only do it, what rule would you provide for us? Or what cases do you have that say that it should be narrowed in that way?
Well, the cases I cited, all the cases talk about that the safety valve is to get somebody to cooperate against others. They talk about the Arrington case in this circuit. Amazu talks about cooperation. And the fact is the police don't need the information about how they arrested him. They have that. They have it. He disagrees with them on how it happened.
Because you argued that previously, but do you have cases that say that there's a limitation? I understand you're looking at the cases that have been decided by this court, but do you have any support for sort of the narrow way you want us to interpret this?
Well, I don't agree with narrow way, but no, there are no cases to talk about that. I would say this. If in the course of talking about the arrest, say Borrello wasn't there, for instance, that would not be a truthful statement about somebody who was involved with him. Or if he said, I don't know who lived in the apartment with me, and they could show that was not true. But those, and that might be the circumstance surrounding the arrest, if he denied, and there is a case I just recently saw from another circuit where he denied somebody, the defendant denied a certain person was present at the meeting. But I think that with respect to how they got to him and how they happened to be in that garage, the interesting thing is at the plea, which was under oath, he said, I never got the duffel bag, and both the court and the government said, that's okay, you had constructive possession. But yet when it comes down to the safety valve, his constructive possession isn't good enough. Now he's got to admit physical possession or he doesn't get the relief. That statement was made under oath at the plea. The government jumped in and said, the government want to inquire. No, Judge, he's acknowledging possession. And knowledge of the contents. I think that's a sufficient factual basis for the plea.
And that was the factual basis for the plea.
Yes.
That was really focused on, because the prosecutor said they were troubled by the statement that he made. But obviously, to plead guilty, you have to have some kind of possession, whether it's actual or constructive.
Exactly.
And so that was for purposes of a factual basis for the plea.
Right.
The court didn't say anything about how that would be used later in sentencing.
Well,
nor was that raised, was it?
In a sense, I would say yes, he did, because the judge said after the plea, he said to him, and I read from page 17 of the August 21st hearing when he pled, he says, fully cooperate with the probation officer and U.S. attorney, that will put you in the best shape possible. We will vacate the trial date as to Mr. Montes. So what Judge Castillo was saying, go ahead and talk to these people, and I'm considering safety valve. Cooperate. You'll be in the best shape possible. And yet he knows at that time he's not going to admit he had the bag. He's already told him. Yes, sir.
Doesn't the law say if the government opposes safety valve relief, the defendant must produce evidence that his disclosure was complete?
Yes. And we're saying the
government makes that judgment, don't they?
No, I don't think so.
As to whether it was complete, I mean, in their opinion?
No.
At least, unless I'm reading this backwards. If the government opposes safety valve relief, the defendant must produce evidence that his disclosure was complete.
Right.
What is the evidence? Not his self-serving declaration. What is his evidence that it was complete?
Well, the evidence that was complete was he told him about Barrera, he told him about the traps in the car, he told him about Madrigal Martinez, he told him about money that he saw in the apartment, he told him about other cocaine.
But the government has other information that they wanted him to confirm, and he says no.
So I don't think that the only thing the government wanted him to confirm was that he actually took possession, physical possession of that bag that day. That's the only thing the government...
His contention is that he never had his hands on it.
He never had his hands on it.
And he never saw it.
He never saw it.
It was on the other side of the car.
Exactly.
Well, the court also made some findings with respect, or at least one finding with respect to the traps in other cars.
Yes.
and found against your client there.
I don't recall that.
In terms of when the district court called him a glorified driver of cocaine and said that, you know, it was not really plausible that he would have this much in terms of drugs and not know that they were drugs. I think there was some discussion of that, wasn't there?
I think everybody's saying that he was being used by Mr. Madrigal Martinez. And he basically said he was used by this other man who fled, and he was using this kid to drive his cocaine for him.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Manish Shah, and I represent the United States. The disagreement that the defendant says he has with the officers is not about how he was arrested. It's about the very crime itself. It is the defendant denying the receipt in his own hands of 15 kilograms of cocaine. It's not about the manner of his arrest. That's the crime. That's what the agents observed, and that's what the district court found to be credible. The district court made a credibility finding that the agent who observed this bag transfer was telling the truth. That is what happened. And that was in part based on the district judge's experience, knowledge, and logic about how drug transactions occur, what makes sense when someone is delivering hundreds of thousands of dollars of cocaine to another person. What the defendant chose to do was to admit the barest minimum, to plead guilty, and to attempt to get a state defense. But the denial of receiving the cocaine physically in his hands was but one example of the defendant minimizing his knowledge and his role in a whole course of conduct. And the district court also noted, when finding that the defendant was not telling the truth about the bag transfer, that that called into question a whole host of other things that the defendant told the government in the safety belt proffer. The defendant said he didn't know how to operate the traps in the vehicles that he was driving. Then he said, I did know how to operate the trap in this one vehicle that Borrero was going to use to bring the cocaine in. But for all other vehicles, all other times, I had no idea how to operate traps.
Why was that important?
It is important because it goes to the defendant's course of conduct in his drug trafficking activities, and it's also important from the defendant's perspective when it comes to drug quantity. The cocaine that was recovered was 14.97 kilograms of cocaine. And under the guidelines, anything over 15 kilograms is going to be a different offense level. So when in his safety valve statement, which is unprotected and could be held, he could be held accountable for any additional drug quantities that he admits to, when he denied any other drug quantities, what he's doing is minimizing and trying to avoid the consequences of additional drug quantities. And that's a factor in evaluating his credibility. It goes to show why he is falsely denying conduct. And looking at the whole safety valve statement, it's clear that he wasn't telling the truth about a whole host of things. But in particular, the district judge found that the bag transfer was an important fact, and it absolutely was. That was the crime. And he denied how it happened. It's not about how he was arrested. It's about the substance of the offense itself.
Well, what about the appellant's argument concerning the court's comment after there had been some discussion during the plea with respect to the possession, and the court's comment that he would not hold it against him when he ultimately admitted constructive possession?
Well, I believe that the court...
And the appellant's argument that somehow he was lulled by the district court into thinking that was okay and that he would still get the safety valve.
Well, ultimately, the district court's comment to the defendant was cooperate fully. And at the end of the day, what that means is tell the government the truth. And the district court also stated, and it was part of what was going on in the change of plea, was the request from the defense, in a sense, to get an advisory ruling from the judge about the firearm that was also recovered. And part of the judge's comments were about whether he would hold the firearm that was recovered, hold the defendant accountable for the firearm. And the district court said, well, at this point, I'm not going to hold that against the defendant unless I hear more, but I'm not going to be able to rule about anything at sentencing until I have the probation report, until I hear what the government has to say and I hear what you have said in your safety valve. So I don't believe the district court lulled the defendant into anything. I think the district court was very clear that at the end of the day, you have to cooperate with the government if you want to get the safety valve, and I, the district judge, am not going to be able to make that decision until I've seen everything. So I don't believe that there was any, certainly there was no ruling on the veracity of the defendant's truthfulness, and since he hadn't even given a safety valve statement, there were so many unknowns with respect to the safety valve at the time of the plea that there's really no reason to think that the judge was binding himself toward any particular set of facts. This was a classic credibility determination by the district judge. Certainly was not clearly erroneous for the judge to find that the defendant lacked candor in giving his safety valve statement. So the government would respectfully request that the defendant's sentence be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The court will take the case under advisement and proceed to case number 2, please.